Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachas Daf Tzadi Vov. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Tzadi Vov, we notice a Mishnah. If you skim down the page, you'll notice that this Mishnah is of rather significant length. Chavite Kohen Gadol, the meal offering brought by the Kohen Gadol on a daily basis, which was known as the Chavite Kohen Gadol, Lishoson Varichoson Vafioson, the kneading of it, the shaping of the loaves, and the baking, Bifnim, are done in the Beis HaMikdash, the Doichos Es HaShabbos, and these actions can be done on Shabbos. In other words, they supersede Shabbos, even though for an individual from the community, a standard person, would not be allowed to do these actions on Shabbos. These are melachos of Shabbos. These are activities that are forbidden. Baking and kneading are forbidden on Shabbos. Nevertheless, when it comes to the Chavite Kohen Gadol, this supersedes Shabbos. Techinoson v'harkodoson, the grinding of it and the sifting, Eino doche esa Shabbos. These activities do not supersede Shabbos. These are to be done, the grinding of the flour and the sifting of the flour for the Chavite Kohen Gadol are to be done before Shabbos. Klal Omar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva set a rule concerning what supersedes Shabbos and what does not. Kol melacha, any activity, she'efshir la'asoyso me'erev Shabbos, that could have been done erev Shabbos, eino doiches Shabbos. That kind of activity cannot be done on Shabbos. V'she'i efshir lo la'asos me'erev Shabbos, doiches Shabbos. And that which could not be done erev Shabbos does not supersede, that does supersede Shabbos. Kol ha'menachos yesh bohen ma'isekli. All the menachos have a need for a vessel, bifnim, to be done in the Beis HaMikdash. That's maise kli bifnim. V'ein bohen maise kli bachutz. And they don't have things that are vessel-oriented that can be done outside. Example, when we speak about maise kli, we're talking about the kneading and the shaping of the loaves. So the kneading of the dough requires a vessel. That has to be done in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, as such, it gained sanctity by having been placed in the vessel. Once something has sanctity, it's subject to something called psul lina. This is something we've discussed on numerous occasions in previous shiurim. That is, something that is placed in a service vessel, in a kli shores, gains kedushas haguf. It gains an inherent level of sanctity, and as such, it becomes subject to the psulina, which means that if it's left overnight till the next day, it becomes invalid. Therefore, when it comes to, let's say, the kneading and the shaping of the loaves, being that these are activities that are done in a service vessel, they could not be done Erev Shabbos. Had they been done Erev Shabbos, when Shabbos comes around, they would become pusel. Therefore, they supersede Shabbos. We have a marking here, a double underline with a design in it, and on the outside margin we have a nosei, mivneh heading. Nosei is a topic, and mivneh is a structural note. If you look at the outside margin, you notice this design is featured, and we've written there, shtei halechem, and lechem haponim, shiurehem. Here, the Mishnah will discuss the dimensions associated with these two types of offerings. Shtei halechem, these are two loaves that are brought on Shavuos. Orkon shiva tefachim, the length of these loaves are seven tefach, and rochvon dalet tefachim, and the width is four tefachs. v'karnosehem arba etzbos. In the corner, in each one of the four corners of these rectangular loaves, there was an additional piece of dough that is called the karnos, the kronos, either the corners or the literally the horns of dough that were four finger breadths in height. Lechem upon him, the 12 loaves that sat in the Beis HaMikdash from week to week, Orkon Asorot Fochim, the Rochbon Hei Tfochim, the length was 10 tefach, and the width was 5 tefach. The Karnoisov and its corners were the projections that were placed in the corners, Sheva Itzbos, were 7 finger breadths in height. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shalotit Er, Rabbi Yehuda, who's gained fame for making abbreviations, gained fame from the Haggadah, where he mentions the 10 plagues that afflicted Mitzrayim, the Tzach, Vadash, Vachav, you have in the abbreviated form. Here, too, he gives the dimensions of these two korbonos, the Shtei Lechem and the Lechem upon him, in an abbreviated form. So he says, Shelo Titeh, so that one does not make, does not confuse the Shtei Lechem with the Lechem upon him, remember the following, Zadad Yehaz. The Zadad, you'll notice, is Zayin is 7, that corresponds to the dimensions of the Shtei HaLechem, which were 7 Tfochim long, Dalet is 4 Tfochim wide, and the final Dalet is a reference to the 4 Etzbos of Kronos. And Yehaz is the dimensions of the Lechem Aponim, 10, Yud is 10, Hey is 5, and the Zion is a reference to the 7 finger breadths of height for the corners. Ben Zoyma Oimer, Venosato al Hashulchan Lechem Ponim Lefonai Tomid. Lechem ponim, the expression lechem ponim in the pasuk, shiu lo ponim. Rashi has two pshatim on this. One is that it's supposed to have the bread is supposed to have side panels. This is a reference to the form that we've discussed on that tzadi dalet, how the lechem aponim's sides were folded up. Another pshat that he has is that it's a reference to the corners, that the extra dough that was placed in the corners of the Lechem Aponim. As we go on in the Mishnah, we have another topic heading that accompanies this section on the outside margin. Shi'ur HaShulchan, the Lechem Aponim, will deal with dimensions concerning the table and the breads, the Lechem Aponim dimensions, which we mentioned already, but you'll see it's mentioned again in a specific context, V'tzuras HaNochas HaLechem al HaShulchan, and how, in what position were the breads placed on the table. So the Mishnah also has in it two approaches, and that is illustrated by the Roman numeral number 1 that you see over here, which culminates in Rebbe Yehuda, and the number 2 right after that is placed by Rebbe Meir. So the names are circled. You can see Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Meir circled. Number 1 begins with Rebbe Yehuda's presentation, and number 2 follows with Rebbe Meir's presentation. So we continue now in the Mishnah. HaShulchan, the dimensions of the Shulchan were, according to Rebbe Yehuda, Orkoi Yud, the length was 10 Tfochim, V'rochbo Chamisha, and the width 5 Tfochim. The Pasuk talks about it being 2 Amos long and 1 Amo wide. According to Rebbe Yehuda, when it comes to the dimensions associated with vessels, vessels are measured in 5 tefach amo lengths. Each amo, according to Rebbe Yehuda, had 5 tfochim in it, 5 handbreadths. According to Rebbe Meir, an amo had 6 handbreadths, 6 tfochim in it. So the Torah talks about the Shulchan being 2 amos long and 1 amo wide. 2 amos, if each amo is 5 tfochim, makes 10 tfochim of length. 1 amo wide, 5 tfochim of width, according to Rebbe Yehuda. Lechem aponim, orkoi yud v'rochbo, rochbo hei. The length of the lechem aponim was 10 tfochim long and 5 tfochim wide. In fact, the same dimensions as the shulchan. We pointed out before that Rabbi Meir's Shulchan dimensions will be different. However, Rabbi Meir's Lechem Aponim dimensions will not be different. And that we tried to illustrate so that you can see this with a dashed underline under the dimensions of Lechem Aponim here by Rabbi Yehuda and later on by Rabbi Meir. So that the machlokis that will appear between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda concerns the dimensions of the Shulchan alone. Turning back to Rabbi Huda's presentation, after giving us the dimensions of the Shulchan and the dimensions of the Lechem upon him, Nosein Orkoi Keneged Rochboi Shel Shulchan, the length of the Lechem upon him is placed in the width of the Shulchan. Very simply, the Lechem upon him was placed perpendicular to the Shulchan. If you would have done otherwise, if you would have taken the length of the Lechem Aponim and placed it on the length of the Shulchan, the length of the Lechem Aponim would have covered the entire Shulchan. Don't forget, we're going to have two stacks of breads sitting on the Shulchan. In order to have two stacks of breads, You can't place the length of the Lechem Aponim on parallel to the length of the Shulchan, because that will cover the entire table surface. Therefore, what happens is the length of the Lechem Aponim is placed along or on top of the width of the Shulchan, or you could say crisscross or perpendicular. The Mishnah goes on to tell you, the koifel tfochaim umechtso mikan utfochaim umechtso mikan. Once we understand that the breads are placed on the width of the shulchan, bear in mind that the sides of the breads are also folded up, 2.5 tfochim on each end of the bread are folded up. So if you account for 2 times 2.5, you'll realize that 5 of the 10 tfochim of the Lechem Aponim length are accounted for in the sides of the Lechem Aponim, the fold-ups. How much of Lechem Aponim surface remains? Another 5 tfochim. So as far as the Lechem Aponim and its placement on the Shulchan, what was the width of the Shulchan? The width of the Shulchan was 5 tfachim. There is 5 tfachim of Lechem Aponim sitting on the surface of the Shulchan, because we said before that the length of the Lechem Aponim was placed on top of the width of the Shulchan. We've folded up the two sides, thereby creating a situation that the width of the Shulchan surface is taken up completely by the Lechem Haponim. Nimtza Orkoi Mimalei Es Rochboi Shel Shulchan Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. And the Mishnah says what we explained already, that it comes out that the length of the Lechem Haponim is covering the width of the Shulchan. This, of course, is done again in a second stack, so that what you will have is that with Rabbi Yehuda's presentation, you'll have two stacks, each having a width of 5 tfachim, and those two stacks are placed on the surface of the Shulchan, whose length was 10 tfachim, but the two widths of Lechem Aponim, or the two lengths of the Lechem Aponim that are placed in the width of the Shulchan, in effect cover the entire surface of the Shulchan. Rabbi Meir Omer, HaShulchan Orkoi Yud Beis V'Rochboi Vav. Rabbi Meir's dimensions of the Shulchan are different than that of Rabbi Yehuda. The length is 12 tfachim and the width is 6 tfachim. Lechem Aponim Orkoi Asora V'Rochboi Hei. Noisein Orkoi, you place the length of the breads keneged rochboi shel shulchan, across the width of the shulchan. Koifel tfochayim mikan utfochayim mikan. You then on the breads you fold up 2 tfochim on each side of the bread. So the length was 10 tvachim. You're folding up two tvachim on each side. Reading that again, koifel tvachayim mikan utvachayim mikan utvachayim revach beemtza. There will be two tefach, a gap between the two stacks of breads. We mentioned that the width of the lechem aponim is 5. The second stack will also have a width of 5. That accounts for 10 tefachim when placed on top of the length of the shulchan. According to Buda, there was, however, a length of 12 tefachim. So the widths of the lechem aponim account for only 10 of those 12 tefachim, leaving a 2 tefach gap between the two stacks. What's the purpose of having this gap between the two stacks? So there are two opinions regarding this. First is kedei shetehe haruach min hasheves bohen. This will enable a space for the air to blow, for the wind or the air to blow between the two stacks. Abashol omer shom hoyu noisnim shnei bozichei levona shalech maponim. In that gap of two tefachim between the stacks of the breads, the receptacles holding the levona, bozichei levona, the name bozichen is the name of the receptacles holding the Lavona spice. This spice was placed on, was burnt on the Mizbeach every Shabbos. And that's the space in which the Bozichin were placed, these two Tvachim. We should mention that Rebbe Meir's loaves, when we spoke about them being folded up, the loaf length was 10 tefachim, and we mentioned of the 10 tefachim, 2 and 2, that's 4 tefachim, will account for the fold-ups on either side. That's 4 are folded up, and 6 of length remain. Length was placed in the width of the shulchan, but Rebbe Meir's shulchan width was 6 tefachim. So just like before with Rebbe Yehuda, the length of the bread covered the width of the shulchan according to his standards, Rebbe Meir's length of bread also covers the shulchan standards that he suggests. Continuing in the Mishnah, Omru Lo, those that differed with Reb Abba Shol said, Hare kvar ne'amar v'nosata al hamareches levoy nezaka. The two tvachim that remain in the length of the shulchan after the two stacks of breads are placed on it are not for the lavona. The lavona was placed on top of the mareches, it means on top of the breads, so that the space between the two stacks was, as we said, for the air. Amar lahem, so Abba Shol responds and says, are you telling me that the that al means on top of? You have another pasuk that says the olov mate menashe, and in that pasuk we're talking about the positioning of the different tribes, and olov in that pasuk means next to. So the word al can mean next to, and that's what I say, says Abba Shol, with regard to v'nasata al amareches levona zaka, means that the bazichen containing the levona were placed next to the loaves, not on top of. The arba snifen shelzov hoyusham. There were 4 side panels that were part of the setup. Mifutzolin me roshehen. The side panels had notches in them, and these notches were for the purpose of inserting the rods that were placed on the top of each loaf. So, in addition to the rods being placed on top of each loaf, their ends were inserted into these notches that were found in the side panels that were placed to either side of the shulchan. Being that there were 2 stacks, each stack had alongside it 2 panels, so 2 stacks accounting for 4 snifen panels. So we mentioned that these were mifutzam rishon shahu somchin bohen, that helped to support the loaves. Shnayim l'seder zeh u'shnayim l'seder zeh, two snifin for this stack and two panels for the second stack. V'chavches konim, chavches is 28. V'chavches konim k'chatzi konah cholul. There were a total of 28 rods. These rods were essentially rods that were half semi-circular in shape. They were long rods, as we say, that were semicircular. Arba asar l'seder zeh, arba asar l'seder zeh. Out of a total of 28, there were 14 for each stack. Lo seder konim velon tilosam doiches Shabbos. The setting up of the konim on the loaves and the removal of the konim from on top of the loaves, which took place on Erev Shabbos, not on Shabbos. Elo nichnas me'erev Shabbos. The Kohen would enter the Heichal on Erev Shabbos, v'shomto, and remove the rods, leaving the breads to be literally one on top of the other without anything between them. The v'shomto means he would put them off to the side. V'nosno l'orkoi shel shulchan, and the rods were placed on the table's length. Kol hakelim shehoyu b'mikdash, orkon l'orkoi shabayas, all of the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, their length were parallel to the length of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, its length was from east to west, so that the vessels' length were also placed from east to west. Kol hamenochas yesh bohen maisa kli mibifnim. This was mentioned in the earlier part of the Mishnah, that all the menochas, their procedures that were needed to be done in vessels, were done in the Beis HaMikdash. Shalu es Rebbe, zu minayin. Rebbe posed the question, this point, from where is it known that menochas, that the meal offerings require vessels in their preparation? Omar lahem, harehu oimer, there's a pasuk that says, Vayomer elai ze hamokam shivashlusham hakoyanim es ha'osham ves hachatos asher yoifu es hamincho levilti hoitzi el hachotzer hachitzoina. It's a pasuk in Yecheskel that mentions different types of animal offerings and also mentions the mincha. Mincha doime de osham v'chatos. The mincha is paralleled to the osham and chatos animal offerings. Ma osham v'chatos teunim kli, just like animal offerings require a vessel, and the vessel in the context of animal offerings, it will start with the knife used for the shechita, and you have the mizrok, the receptacle that would contain the blood. So you see that vessels were part and parcel of the animal sacrifice procedure. So af mincha nami teuno kli, so to a mincha in its preparation requires vessels. Hashulchan orkoi asora. Before we continue in the Gemara, let us glance at our topic heading, the nosei that we see on the outside margin. Ad eze goiva mekadesh hashulchan. Until what height above the shulchan surface can sanctity be imposed? When we speak about being above the shulchan height, the practical point here would be that if anything is placed in the airspace above the shulchan within the dimensions that we're about to learn, they will gain sanctity, and that item then will be subject to apsulina if left overnight. So we are interested in knowing how much airspace above the shulchan can impose sanctity. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, ledivrei ha'oimer tfochaim u'mechza koifel, according to the opinion in the Mishnah that says that the breads were folded up on their sides, 2.5 tfochim, each stack, don't forget, had six breads, each bread having a height of 2.5 tfochim, nimsa shulchan mekadesh chamisha asor tfochim limala. It comes out then that the shulchan would sanctify 15 tfachim above its surface. How did we get to 15? We did 6, that's 6 loaves, times 2.5. Account for the height for each of each loaf, giving you a total of 15 tfachim. L'divrei ha'omer tfachayim koifel, according to the opinion that we saw in the Mishnah, that said you fold up only 2 tfachim that would account for the sides of each loaf. The height of each loaf then was 2 tfachim. Nimsa shulchan mekadesh, yud beis tfachim lamala. Yud beis is 12. That's 6 times 2, 12 tfachim above. The Gemara now has a series of questions that we have highlighted with a little house form. In the outside margin, you see the Mivneh heading. That's the structural note. And the word V'ho'iko featured in quotation marks. If you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice that this word V'ho'iko is featured in the marking. And there is another one of these on Tzadi Vav Amid Beis. What are these? So our note says Sidra Shel Kushios, a series of questions, Sheyesh Lahoisif Bashir Hagoyva Mipnei Gormim Shonim, that really we should be increasing the height because of different contributing factors. Let's see what they are. And of course, we'll have to see responses why each one of them really is not a height factor. V'ho'iko Konim. Is there not the rods that were placed between each loaf? In other words, on top of each loaf, there were a series of rods. And only above that, on top of the rods, were placed another bread. If you multiply the number of, layers of rods that accompanied the breads, you would increase the height. Once again, because on top of any given loaf were some rods. On top of the rods, another loaf. So that we're not doing just times, let's say, 6 times height of bread, but you have to account for the increased height that's because of the presence of these rods. The Gemara answers, no. Konim shikui mishakalahu. The konim were set, were shikui, literally is sunk into. So the rods sunk into the breads, not adding to their height. The Gemara asks, what do you mean? You mean the rods sunk into the loaves, creating what situation that when the next loaf was placed above the lower one, the rods didn't account for any increased height? The Gemara will ask as follows, what was the whole purpose of these rods? The whole purpose was to prevent mold from developing. Don't forget, the loaves were right after they were warm, they were placed one on top of the other. If you leave warm loaves piled one on top of the other, you're inviting a mold environment to develop. The rods would create a little bit of gap enabling air to blow between each loaf, thereby preventing the mold from developing. But if you're saying that the rods sank into the surface of the sides of these breads, then you haven't gained anything. The Gemara now raises the question. Konim. After the Gemara said the Konim Shkui Meshakalu, the Gemara asks, my taima. This is a rhetorical type question regarding the reason, but it is a question regarding the matter of height. My taima, what is the reason for having the rods in the first place? Mishum apushi lechem, to prevent mold from developing. Well, soif kol ma'apush lechem, according to your answer that the rods sunk into the surface of the breads, the surface of the sides of the breads, you haven't accomplished anything. The purpose of the rods is not going to be accomplished because, once again, the loaves will be sitting snug one on top of the other, creating an ipush, a mold situation. The Gemara answers that it doesn't sink completely into the loaf, but rather the magda le porta. There's a slight gap between each bread because of the presence of the rods. The Gemara asks, oh, so there is a gap between each level of bread? V'ho'iko ha'hu porta. Then, is there not that little extra gap? And multiply that by the number of layers of rods, so that will, in fact, constitute increased height? The Gemara answers, it's true that there's increased height. However, kevan de lo havi tefach lo choshev le. It doesn't add up to a complete tefach. Therefore, it's not counted in our statistics. So at this point, we're sticking with the statistics we mentioned before of either 12 or 15 of increased height. True, it's a little bit more of increased height, but it's not mentioned here, because the rods wouldn't account for an additional complete tefach. Question, Voika Bozichin. Is there not the bozichin, the lavona containers that were placed on top of the breads that would increase, that would constitute for increased height above shulchan surface? The Gemara answers, Begave de lechem havu yasfi ulebahadi lechem havu kaimi. The bozichin were vessels whose own height wasn't very great. The height of the bozichin was absorbed, so to speak, within the height of the lechem aponim. Once again, the lechem aponim were, using one of the shittas we saw back on Daf Tzadi Dalid, was in effect a box shape with two open sides, so that the sides of the lechem aponim had the height that we saw featured above, either 2 or 2.5 tefachim. The bozichin sat within that, within the sides. Now notice, it sat on the bottom of the lechem haponim, within the sides of the lechem haponim height, so that the height of the bozichin was contained within the height of the sides of the lechem haponim. The Gemara asks, Vo'iko Kronos, but were there not the corners of the lechem aponim that were added? We mentioned that there were pieces of dough added to the lechem aponim. The Gemara answers, it's true they were added, however they didn't increase the height of the lechem aponim, because those added pieces of dough were added to the flat loaf before the sides were folded up, so that as a flat piece of dough with the kronos added, the kronos projected upwards. However, when the sides were folded in, they were no longer projecting upwards, but rather they were now at a 90 degree angle, so to speak, to where they were before. So kronos legave de lechem kayif luhu velechem olayu noch lei. The kronos were folded in, namely over the bottom of the bread, and the next stack of bread was placed above above the folded in kronos, so that the kronos were no longer projecting vertically, but they were now projecting horizontally because of their having been folded in. Question, Vaika Mizgarto. What about the mizgeres of the shulchan? The mizgeres of the shulchan was, a mizgeres is a frame. This mizgeres was a, we can call them slats, if you will, that were a tefach in width. And these slats formed a frame around the shulchan. So being that the frame had a tefach of width, and that was placed all around the shulchan, would that not account for an additional tefach of height? So the Gemara answers that, well, our Mishnah that doesn't, our statistics, let us say, that we saw Reb Yochanan, who presented the statistics of 12, of 15 and 12 of height, so Reb Yochanan is talking Kaman d'Omar Mizgarto Lamata Hoysa. There is a controversy as to how this frame was attached to the Shulchan. One opinion says, and Reb Yochanan is apparently learning according to this opinion, in the meantime, that the frame was attached around the legs of the shulchan. In other words, the frame did not rise above the table's surface, but under the table's surface were the legs of the shulchan. So it was around the legs of the shulchan that the mizgeres was attached. Very simply, it was below the surface of the table, and as such, it did not account for any increased height. the Gemara goes on to comment, Uleman de Omar Mizgarta Uleman Lahoisa, and according to the opinion that the Mizgaris was in fact above the surface of the table, that too would not be reason for increased height. Parkude have mefar kido velechem begave the shulchan have yosef. The frame was placed around, albeit around the surface of the shulchan. However, it was attached in a bent outward fashion. In other words, at an angle, so that the breads, in effect, sat within the mizgeres, within this frame, being that the frame was placed in an angular fashion around the top of the shulchan. Kedisanya, we have a Tanaic source that features the issue concerning the mizgeres. Rabbi Yossi Omer lo hoyasham snifin. Rabbi Yossi says there were no side panels. Ela mizgarto shel shulchan mamedes es alechem. The mizgeres, in effect, supported the breads. This would conform to the opinion we just saw about the frame being placed around the surface, around and above the surface of the shulchan, being that the frame was bent slightly outwards, the breads would be able to sit within the frame, so that the frame was that which helped support the breads, and therefore no need for the side panels. Omrulo, so those that disagree with Rabbi Yossi said to him, how can you say that? Mizgarto lamato hoisa. The mizgeres didn't support the breads. The mizgeres was placed around the shulchan below the surface. So those are two opinions with regard to the positioning of the mizgeres, and two Tanaic opinions, which the Gemara had made reference to just before. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Ludivrei Ha'omer, Mizgarto Lamato Hoisa. According to the opinion that the mizgeres was not around the surface of the table, but rather around the legs, Tavlo HaMesapeches Temea, a flat piece of wood that can be used on both sides. That's a tavlo hamisapeches that you can use on both sides, is mekabel tuma. The table was basically made of wood covered with gold. The Rashi in Dibur Masel Tmea says kishulchan. The halacha that Rabbi Yochanan just mentioned was a board used on both sides, is mekabel tuma, just like the shulchan kishulchan shel migdash shei mekabel tuma k'mefarsh l'kamon. The beis hamigdash shulchan was also a vessel capable of absorbing tuma. The ein tav lazu kishar pshuti kli'etz. This tavla, this board, is not treated in halachic terms like a standard flat pieces of wood. Standard flat pieces of wood are not mekabel tuma. The rechavahi base kibula. This is a wide flat piece of wood. All flat pieces of wood that are fit for medrash is a situation of leaning on or resting upon, are mekabel tuma, in contrast to standard pshute kli eitz, which are not mekabel tuma, as it says, kim forsh behedya bebechoros perk al elu mumin. The Rashi goes on to give some additional background. The parchinon hosam ukli shetef the les le toch midoraisa miavu bar kibuli tuma. The Gemara there asks regarding kli shetef, are vessels that are immersed in the mikveh that are subject to ritual purification. However, if they don't have a receptacle area, that's called that they don't have a toch, are not mekabel tuma v'hadumya desak bo'inon. The materials listed in the pasuk are listed along with saks. You have wood mentioned together with sak. The Torah therefore is expecting, in order for something to mekabel tuma, it has to be like a sack. Sak is a sack, and a sack is something that is moved around both empty and full when it contains something. If you have, let us say, a piece of wood, a slat of wood, maybe you use as a spoon or a knife, you wouldn't be able to carry anything on it because it's flat. It doesn't have sides. So how can a flat piece of wood ever be subject to Kabbalah's Tumah? U'meshaninon b'hanoch d'chozu l'midrosois. The Gemara in Bechoros mentions those kinds of flat pieces of wood that are fit for resting upon. So since you rest upon it, it's said to be a container as well. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying here that the flat surface of the Shulchan, the flat surface, was a tavlo hamisapeches. You can use either side of it. You could flip it over the surface of the Shulchan, and it was used to hold, to contain the breads. So it is mekabel tuma, being that both sides could be used. The fact that both sides could be used creates a situation where it is like having a base kibul. we should mention once again that since this flat piece of wood had a significant amount of width to it, so it is considered a base kibul. If things can be kept on it, and you would be able to move it around while things are on it, therefore it's mekabel tuma. The Gemara goes on, l'divrei ha'omer mizgarto l'mala hoisa, according to the opinion that says that the frame was placed above the surface of the table. So the surface of the table is not something that you would flip over. It had the frame would let's say limit you in that sense. So tavlo hamesapeches tiboyoloch, the issue of a flat board that could be used on both sides would remain a question about its ability to makabel tuma. According to the first opinion cited here, that the mizgeris was below the surface of the table, the surface of the table was perfectly flat and could be used on both sides because the frame wouldn't be interfering. The frame was below the surface around the legs. And as such, since we know that the shulchan is mekabel tuma, therefore this tavla mesapeches would be mekabel tuma, the shulchan being the precedent for that. This is all working with the assumption that the Shulchan is Mekabel Tuma. Well, that leads us into the next discussion. The topic heading that we have on the outside margin here reads as follows. Under the heading Nosei, HaShulchan Hoya Mekabel Tuma. Afalpi, the Shulchan was Mekabel Tuma, even though at first glance, it's called a Kli Eitz Osui Lenachasu. It's a wooden vessel that is made to be positioned constantly in the same spot. A kli eitz ha'osui lenachas. Lenachas is to be at rest, meaning not to be moved. Once again, we said before that a kli eitz is mekabel tuma as long as it is like a sack. A sack is something that is moved when full. You move it around. We don't know the shulchan to be like that. The shulchan is something that sat all the time, from week to week, in the Heichal. So as such, it's a Kli Eitz Ha'osui Lenachas, and it's therefore not like Sak, and therefore it should not be Mekabel Tuma. So how can we be working with how can Rav Yochanan be speaking about a Tavla HaMesapeches being something similar to the Shulchan which was Mekabel Tuma? Let's read this now inside. The question itself is of some length. You can see we've used a long question marking symbolized by the kuf that's encircled with a vertical descending dash line. The Gemara asks, Michlal de Shulchan bar kibule tuma hu? Are you implying that the Shulchan is subject to Kabbalah's tuma, to absorbing ritual impurity? Kli eitza osui lenachas hu. It's a wooden vessel who's designed to be at rest at all times. V'chol kli eitza osui lenachas ein mekabel tuma. Vessels that are made of wood, that are not designed to be moved around, are not mekabel tuma. Imagine, for example, a very tall bookcase that's full of books. Such an item is meant to stay for years and years in the same position. That would be an example of a kli eitz ha'osui lenachas. such an item is not mekabel tuma. My taimo, what's the reason for that? Tumia desak bo'inan. We require for kabbalas tuma, for absorption of ritual impurity, for the item to be like a sack. The word sack appears in the Torah. Ma sack metalta molev rekon, just like a sack is moved around when full as well as when empty. Af kol metalta molev rekon. So too, in order for something to absorb tuma, it has to be something that's moved around when full as well as when empty. But kli etza osu lenachas, when it's filled with whatever it's filled with, is not designed to be moved around. Just like we mentioned, a tall, large bookcase is not designed to be moved around. The Gemara answers, Shulchan nami metaltel mole v'reikon. In fact, the Shulchan was metaltel, even with the breads on it. It was moved around, Kidereish Lakish, and this will be appreciated by following Reish Lakish's teaching. The Amar Reish Lakish, Mai Dichtiv al Hashulchan HaTahor. The Pasuk describes the Shulchan that achieves ritual purity. When you describe something as being Tahor, Tahor Michlal Shehu Tameh, you're implying that it could absorb Tuma. Well, then how is that? Bearing in mind the factors that we just mentioned before about Metalta Molev Rekon, and we are assuming that it's not. So here we find that it's moved around even when the breads are on it. Elo Malame Shemagbien Oisei Le'ili Regolim. On the three holidays that Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, when the Jews came on their pilgrimage to Yerushalayim, masses of Jews came to the Beis HaMikdash. The Shulchan was picked up and brought to toward the entrance of the Heichal. Umarin boi lechem, and the people were shown the breads. The Omrim lahem, and the congregation was informed or shown was told, Reu chibaschem lefnei hamokom, look at your love that is beheld by the Almighty. Look at the love that you have in the eyes of the Almighty. And so what's the connection between, how do you see anything by seeing two stacks of breads? How do you see something special that signifies the love of the Almighty? Kidirebi Yoshua Kedivrei Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. According to his teaching, the Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Neis Gadol Nase Belechem upon him. There was a miracle that took place on a constant basis with regard to the Lechem upon him. Siluko Kesiduro. Its removal, a week later, they were in the same state as they were when they were set up. Shinemar Losum Lechem Cham Biyom Hilokho. Which means that just as the breads were fresh and warm when they were stacked up, they were fresh and warm when they were removed 8 days later, namely from Shabbos to Shabbos. So a full week later, they were still warm and fresh. That was miraculous, and that showed the Kodesh Baruch Hu's love of the Jewish people, that he performed this miracle. So in order for the public to appreciate this, it was necessary to move the Shulchan with the breads on it from its fixed position in the Heichal to toward the doorway where the people could see this and appreciate it. That indicates that the Shulchan was Makabel Tumah based on the fact that it was not a Kli Eitz Ha'osui Lenachas, but rather it was a Kli Eitz HaMetaltel Molei V'Rekon. It was moved around. The Gemara now embarks on a very long question. We have explained this under our topic heading on the outside margin under the title Nosei, and we've written Hemshech because this is a continuation of the discussion concerning the Tuma. So we've written Loma Lo Amrinon, why don't we say Shal Shulchan Bar Kibuli Tuma, that the Shulchan is capable of absorbing Tuma Mishum Tzipui HaMateches Shehoyolov, because of the metal covering that was on the Shulchan. The Shulchan we mentioned was coated in gold. The rules of metal are different, as far as its Kabbalah's Tuma, are different than the rules that apply to wood. We mentioned before that Pshutei Kli Eitz, for example, flat pieces of wood are not Mekabel Tuma.
When it comes to metal, though, flat pieces of metal are mekabel tumah. And furthermore, the dinim of metato molev reikon doesn't apply to metal. Metal is not found in the same pasuk as sack, so that sack, which created the standard of metato molev reikon, applies to the other materials mentioned in the pasuk along with sack. Along with that happens to be wood. However, metal is not mentioned in that pasuk. Therefore, when it comes to metal, even if it's not metatil, even if it's not movable, as long as it's a vessel, it might be a vessel that's designed to be in place for many years, and it's of metal composition, it therefore, being that it's made of metal, is mekabel tumah.
So the Gemara's question here is, why is it so important to describe the Shulchan as being, in fact, metatil mole v'reikon, when you could simply say the Shulchan is mekabel tumah by virtue of the fact that it has a metal coating? This, of course, brings up the issue, do we emphasize the coating? Does the coating define the nature of the vessel? So now, let us see how this question develops as we turn to the Gemara. V'tepuk li, why not learn out mishum tzipui? Learn out that it's mekabel tumah because of the metal coating. Milo Tnan, do we not have the following teaching? We're now going to introduce a source that ironically talks about something, or the emphasis will be on non-Kabbalah Satumah. However, the point that we bear in mind as we learn the next few lines of Gemara is the definition of an item is based on the material that coats it. That's the common point. So in the following teaching, we're going to see that halacha places an emphasis on coating. So the Gemara asks, why not learn that the Shulchan's mekabel tumah because of its coating? Milo tnan, do we not have the following teaching? Hashulchan vadulvaki shenifchesu, shulchan, a table, and a dulvaki, another type of vessel that either developed a hole in them, oy shechipon b'shayish, or were coated with shayish. Shayish is a stone material, sometimes translated as marble. V'shir bohen mokoim hanochas koisois, and there was left uncoated a little spot in which enough space for the placing of cups. Temein, these items would mekabel tuma because it's not fully coated, and the area that's left uncoated is still functioning in its original capacity. So, assuming a shulchan is made of wood, a wooden table would be mekabel tumah. There still is exposed wood in this scenario. Therefore, it says temein. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, mokom hanochas chatichos. He says instead of the spot enough for placing cups, enough room for placing pieces. Chatichos. The term chatichos you find in the context of chatichos basar very often. These items, the shulchan and dulvaki that were just mentioned, were described as being makabel tumah because they were not completely covered with the shayish, with the stone. The Gemara points out shear in, because something was left uncoated, therefore there is kabbalas tumah. Lo shear, however, had something not been left exposed, lo, it would not have been mekabel tumah, because it would have been covered completely by the shayish. The shayish, as we mentioned, is stone, and stone is a material that's not mekabel tumah. We see from this source that we define the nature of the vessel by its coating. So, being that that's the rule that is established from learning this source, we then apply that back to the shulchan, and if you say that the shulchan is coated with metal, it would be defined as a metal vessel, and as such, the portability of it is of no significance. And therefore, we're asking our question, why was it so important to explain before the
Kabbalah's Tumah of the Shulchan based on its portability, when you could have said it's coated in with metal. V'chi Tema, this is emphasized with a marking, with a double underline. The Gemara will attempt this now and again later on. These are attempts to thwart our approach emphasizing coating, but they won't be successful. So that at the end of the day, we're still going to be left with our question of why not emphasize the coating. V'chi Tema, you might want to say, the reason we... that one would follow the coding is kan betzipui omeid, kan betzipui she'eno omeid. When do we follow coding? That's when it's a coding that's permanent, that's affixed with nails into whatever is being coded. However, the shulchan of the Beis HaMikdash was not omeid, was not a permanent coding. In other words, the gold that covered the table was not affixed with nails. And as a result of that, you might want to say sipui in the case of the shulchan is not sufficient for defining it. But v'habo minei Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish asked of Rabbi Yochanan concerning the shulchan and dubiki case that we do follow the coding. Reish Lakish asked, but sipui oy made oy. But sipui shein omeid, is that the case only if the sipui of the coating is permanent or even if it's not affixed with nails? B'shechipa, he has a few other questions. B'shechipa es levizvizin oy b'shelo chipa es levizvizin. Does the coating define it if it covers the levizvizin, the frame or the rim, or even if it doesn't cover the rim? The Omar lay, and Rabbi Yochanan answered, Lo shna tzipui omeid, velo shna tzipui she'eno omeid. And we're emphasizing with a dashed underline the expression lo shna tzipui she'eno omeid, that even if it's not permanent, it still is defined by the coding. Lo shna chipo es levizvizin, velo shna lo chipo levizvizin. And whether it covers the rim or not is also of no concern. So, in the meantime, where are we holding? We're holding with the sipui defining the vessel, as Rabbi Yochanan himself says. It's defining the vessel even if it's not omeid, even if it's not affixed with nails. So that the coating of the shulchan, which was not affixed with nails, still ought to define it as a metal vessel. And as such, no need to emphasize portability. Well, you still might want to say, Atsei shitim chashivi velo batli. The shulchan was made of wood, but of a very expensive type of wood, known as atsei shitim. And as such, it was chashiv, it was of great significance, and therefore the coating is, or therefore the wood doesn't become subsidiary to the coating, and therefore the shulchan remains defined not by its coating, but rather by its wood composition, and therefore it would not mekabel tuma if not for the fact that it's portable. Ha nicha l'Reish Lakish, things would work out according to Reish Lakish. The Amar lo shanu ela beklei ach salgus haboim mi medinas hayam, aval kli mismis chashivi velo batli shapir. These are different materials, these words, achsalgus and mismis. So Reish Lakish says that the coating will be the defining factor if the wood is of no significance. However, if the wood is of significance, it's like kli mismis, it's chashiv, and it does not become, it's lo batel, it doesn't become subsidiary to the coating. Shapir means then we can understand why we needed the reason concerning the portability of the shulchan. That's what things would work out, namely the idea of emphasizing the shulchan's Kabbalah's Tuma based on portability works out according to Reish Lakish, being that Reish Lakish doesn't assign all power to the coating. Therefore, the coating isn't always the overriding factor. Sometimes the coating is itself subsidiary to the wood. Therefore, the shulchan is mekabel tuma only
by virtue of the fact that it's moved around. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, it says even kli mismis, this significant type of material, as well, a significant type of material, let us say type of wood, does become botel, does become subsidiary to the coating. My ikola meimar, what is there to say? Once again, and this is the original question, comes to a head at this point. Once you say that all kinds of wood become subsidiary to their coating, to the metal coating, in this case the gold coating, why do we have to speak about the Kabbalah's Tum of the Shulchan by virtue of its portability? Why not say because it's coated with metal? And even if it wasn't portable, it would be Kabbalah Tum. The Gemara answers, Shiny Shulchan. The case of the Shulchan of the Beis HaMikdash is different. The Rachmona Karya Eitz. The Torah refers to the Shulchan, the complete, the entire made Shulchan, with its coating, is called wood. So that as far as the Torah is concerned, the entire Shulchan is wood. Shinemar, and we have a pasuk in which we are going to emphasize in the course of the Gemara a couple different expressions, but on our first read through, we're going to emphasize two words, the word eitz and the word Shulchan. The pasuk says, HaMizbeach eitz shalosh amos gavoa, orkoi shtayim amos umitzoi sloi veorkoi vekiroisov eitz Vayedaber Elai Zeh HaShulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. So we have used several different, we've used a couple different markings. We have a horizontal dashed line under the words Eitz and the word Shulchan. We see in this pasuk from Yecheskel that speaks about the table of the Beis HaMikdash, it's described as a wooden table. So even though it's coated with gold, it's called a wooden table. And as such, it's Mekabel Tuma only because it is in fact moved while the breads are on it as well. It's called Metatel Molev Areikon. And since it's called wood, we see the Torah is not paying any attention to the coating of it, and therefore the standards of Kabbalah Sotuma that apply to wood vessels have to apply to the Shulchan. And therefore, to repeat our point, it's Mekabel Tuma only by virtue of the fact that it's Metatel Molev Areikon, and that we saw concerning the Olei Regolim, they were shown the breads on their thrice a year pilgrimage to Yerushalayim. The Gemara now points out something incongruous about this pasuk. Pasach b'mizbeach, the siyei b'shulchan. If you look at another marking that we have a diagonal dashed underlines under two more words, or two words. In this case, HaMizbeach, and the word Shulchan. It's true, and you have to note that we've marked the word Shulchan twice because where there's a dual reference or a double purpose for referring to the word Shulchan. At this point, we want to notice that the pasuk opens up describing the Mizbeach, the altar, and then it concludes by saying, this is the table that was in front of the Almighty. That's a rather odd situation, and the Gemara is asking this. Pasach b'mizbeach v'shulchan b'shulchan. It opens talking about the mizbeach, and then it concludes and says, "This is the table." So make up your mind: are we talking about the mizbeach or the table? Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar the Ami Travayu, they together explain that as follows: Bizman shebeis hamikdash kayim, when the Beis HaMikdash was extant, mizbeach mechaper al adam. The Mizbeach, the altar, offered or afforded atonement to an individual. A person would bring his sacrifices and offer them on the Mizbeach. The Achshav She'en Beis HaMikdash Kayam Shulchano Shel Adam Mechaper Olav. Now that there is no Beis HaMikdash, how does a person attain atonement? Through his table. And Rashi explains, there are two girsos that appear in the Rashi, but either way, the table, a person's table, meaning a person's table that he has his meals on. He has his meals, he invites guests. Orchim, or another girsa, aniyim, the impoverished, that he shares his food with these people. That is an act that's parallel to the offering of sacrifices. And as such, the table also works as a mizbeach, and hence the pasuk is quite consistent when it talks about the mizbeach and the shulchan. They both accomplish the same goal, one acting in the time of the Beis HaMikdash and the other fulfilling that capacity after the Churban HaBayis. With with that, of course, we want to conclude our shiur on a positive note and express our hopes and prayers for the immediate rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.